What a tribute to Joyce that so many people have come together. This is a remembering time. I think it's so appropriate that we have this wonderful light-filled photo of Joyce surrounded by the light of the candles. She was truly one of the light-filled people that I knew. All life is eternal. All love is immortal. And death is only a horizon. The horizon is nothing but the limit of one's sight. Death is not extinguishing the light. It's putting out the lamp because the dawn has come. Friends and family, we're gathered here today to give thanks and to celebrate the life of Joyce Duncan, whose death has surely left a huge hole in our circle. Though she was called by the oncology team the miracle lady, her struggle with cancer ended last Friday. Hi, Myra. Joyce was a 30-year teacher of mathematics with the Etobicoke School Board, and I know there are some of you here who taught with Joyce because I've had a chance to overhear some of your conversations. But I knew Joyce mostly as Cam's partner of 37 years, as Rob and Arlie's mom. And I know their partners, Becky and Ryan, were welcomed into Joyce's heart as honorary children, so you're honorary children too. Joyce was regular grandma. I was Grandma Moon and Pam was Grammy, but Joyce was regular grandma. And whenever she was visiting us, Myra was always glad to get back to regular grandma. She and Cam helped Becky and Rob raise Myra and Liam in their first years and have been a wonderfully welcoming presence to all of the other grandparents when we came to visit. She was sister to Roy. She was aunt to many nieces and nephews. She was sister-in-law and I know dear friend to many of you. And so we're here today to share memories. This is a remembering place, a remembering time. We're here together to support her family. We're here together to offer her life back to its source and to give thanks because we are all richer for having known her. I'd like to invite Becky to read something which speaks about the quality of person that Joyce was.
This is from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions, and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. But as for prophecies, they will come to an end. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will come to an end. For we know only in part, and we prophesy only in part. But when the complete comes, the partial will come to an end. When I was a child, I spoke like a child, thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. And when I became adult, I put an end to childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known. And now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love.
certainly felt that described Joyce. Alan, who's the son of Joyce's best friend, is going to read from Ecclesiastes.
Thanks, I didn't know how to pronounce it.
To everything there is a season, a time for purpose under heaven, and a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to plant or to pluck what is planted, a time to kill, and a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to throw away, a time to tear, and a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace.
And Joyce lived through a lot of those times and seasons. We have some people who would like to speak, but I know that we would welcome stories from anyone here after they've had a chance to speak. The first person who's going to speak is Roy, her brother.
Oh, thank you. I was asked to talk a little bit about Joyce's early life growing up in Northern Ontario. So I'm going to try and do that. Before Joyce was born, we lived on a little island, a place called Grassy Narrows. It was 50 miles north of Kenora by the way the crow flies. And at that time, the only way you could get there was either by float plane or maybe a really long canoe ride. So my dad, Pete, was the post manager for the Hudson's Bay Post there. And he ran the general store, sold supplies to the local Indian settlement, and bought furs for the Hudson's Bay. So he was really a fur trader in the true sense, as the natives brought their pelts into the post and then traded them for provisions. And we were talking about that because I think we were looking for Joyce's birth certificate, because I think it says that on her birth certificate under my father's name, profession, fur trader. So that's the story there. But we lived in the manager's house, which was a short distance from the store, and it offered all the comforts of home, except things like running water, electricity, central heat. My mother did have an electric washing automatic washing machine, though. It was gas-powered, and from what I remember, very noisy, and I can remember her chasing it around the kitchen when it was washing. We had coal lanterns, wood stove for cooking and heating, so it was too hot in the summer and too cold in the winter. Some of you may know, relate to that. So when Joyce was born, Mom and I flew out to Winnipeg. Dad had to stay home to mind the store. And I always remembered these trips because on these trips I got to stay with my grandparents in St. James, which is a suburb of Winnipeg. And ironically, my grandmother lived at 222 Ferry Road in St. James, and Cam's grandmother lived at 229 Ferry Road, just two blocks apart. And they actually knew each other, but who would have ever known that things would evolve the way they did? So it was a very short visit that time to get back, because my mom had Joyce, and we had to get back before freeze-up, because if you didn't get in to the Narrows before freeze-up, then it would be about a month or so before the ice was thick enough for plane to land in the winter. So we were back there, and we stayed two more years in Grassy Narrows. And I guess when Joyce was about 14 months, we made our first trip out, and I was five. We moved to Montreal. My dad was taking a fur trading course for 3 months, And so that was good. I got to go to kindergarten, and Joyce got a really bad case of the mumps, which the rest of us got as well. It seemed that living in the north, you weren't as used to the, or more susceptible to childhood diseases, I guess. So after Montreal, my dad, now with more experience in fur trading, we were sent up to Lansdowne House, which was really, I guess, in the bush. It was on Lake Abawabiskat, which flows into James Bay. So it was about 250 miles north of Sioux Narrows. And of course, everyone knows where Sioux Narrows is, right?
I do.
Yes, you do. It's quite a bit north of Kenora. So, again, I don't think there was many modern conveniences there. I don't really remember all that much about what we did up there. I could tell you a lot of things that I did that to get into trouble, but I don't really remember too much of that. Joyce never, of course, as you, knowing Joyce, you know, she never got into trouble. And I know we had a lot of pet rabbits, wild rabbits for pets, and we had a baby muskrat that Joyce was very afraid of. But my mom always said she could leave Joyce on a blanket with a few toys, and she'd play alone for hours. Whereas when I was that age, they put me in the playpen upside down with a rock on top of it. So after another two years in Lansdowne House, my dad made the decision it was time to get back to civilization. So we moved to Kenora, Ontario in 1950. And that was a big move for us. First school that I went to was grade 3. So the first house that we lived in Kenora actually had central heating. Very literally, it was basically a four-room house plus bathroom, and in the center hallway was a big, huge grate on top of the furnace, which was in the basement. It was a wood furnace. And Joyce and I shared one of the bedrooms, and in the winter, we had to jump from our bedroom into the bathroom because if you landed on the grate, you burnt your foot with bare feet. And Joyce, being smaller and not able to jump as far, she got more burns than I did. So growing up, Joyce had to endure being my little sister, and I guess I didn't help matters too much thinking, because I thought that older brothers were expected to torment their sister and their friends, you know. And it wasn't until I became a teenager that I saw the error of my ways then, because by that time Joyce's friends had gone from annoying little brats to attractive young girls, and they wouldn't talk to me. But it wasn't all bad, because I found that my popularity grew because all my friends wanted to hang out at the house when Joyce and her friends were there. So this one, you know, Joyce had to follow me through school. Of course, she took her own path. She was the quiet one. She was studious. She was hardworking. She was popular with her friends. She always did her homework, and it was always correct. Always handed in on time, never any trouble. And she went on through high school at the top of her class, and most of you know she went to Waterloo with full scholarship. But my mother tells of a story, and the teachers here will appreciate this probably, that when she went into to the school for the parent-teacher interview for the first time for Joyce's teacher, this one teacher looked up at her in horror and said, "You don't have another child in this school, do you?" Because I had been there. And she said, Joyce is Roy's sister? I can't believe it. You know, it was So as we got older, we finally became friends as well as brother and sister. And I used to look forward to our visits. And I was pretty fortunate in the fact that living in BC, I was able to travel back to Toronto quite often on business. So as a result, I got to visit Joyce and Cam quite a bit, and I got to see Rob and Arlie grow up, and then now I'm seeing Myra and Lee grow up. So it's been really good that way. And as my parents got older and needed help, it was Joyce who had to respond because she was closer. And she always did that. I always appreciated that because she did it without complaining and took that in stride. So, our family has never been very good at sharing our inner feelings, but we always had a very strong family bond, and I feel that lives on with the family now. And so, Joyce, we miss you. I miss you. I know we all miss you. And I know you're at peace and reunited with Mom and Dad, and you live on in our thoughts. So, goodbye, little sister.
Make sure you just take yours, Roy.
I just got mine.
The next speaker, thank you. The next speaker is Chris Johnston.
My, what a testament to friendship and family. There are many words that describe Edna Joyce Duncan. Calm, patient, diligent, careful, thoughtful, reliable, trustworthy, honest, loyal, content, tolerant, loving, teacher, daughter, wife, mother, friend. Joyce was an outstanding teacher who spent hours preparing lessons, assignments, tests, and marking them. She knew her students had high expectations for them, and had high expectations for them. As a colleague, she was generous with her time, resources, and support. When I, the art teacher, was handed a math class in mid-September, Joyce's response was, "Don't worry, you can do that. I'll help you." And she handed me a binder full of lesson plans, handouts, tests, and answer sheets. I've tried to extend the same help to my colleagues, but I'm nowhere near as organized as Joyce. They get loose sheets of paper and the homework helpline telephone number. Sitting with Joyce in the hospital, I listened to the stories that were being told by her children, by her nephews and nieces, by her other family, by her friends, and the love and the respect that they had for Joyce, and Joyce's pride and love for her family was clearly evident in every word I heard. I met Joyce in 1974 at Alderwood Collegiate, and I had a sense then that she was someone very special. And over the years, as our friendship grew and deepened, that feeling was confirmed in many ways. We were all young then. We all had our children together. I think Ralph Prentice sprouted new gray hairs every time one of us came into the office because he knew we were coming in to tell him, get another baby. We would get together for lunches and suppers and bring all our children together. And we still meet. Just last June, we met at Linda Winter's place, Linda and Dale, and Marg Platt, Kathy Lane, and myself, and had dinner together. Joyce was my go-to girl. When the boys were sick, she was my first source of calming advice. When I was thinking about major life changes, she was my sounding board. Faced with an unbearable loss, she was my comfort. Never intrusive, always supportive. She was the rock that tethered my hot air balloon. Thank you. As halves of a long-distance relationship, we were always arriving and leaving. But neither of us ever imagined this early a departure. We'll miss you, Joyce, my friend, our friend. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Arlie.
I warn you now, this is not going to be good. Okay. For first of all, I'd like to thank you all for coming. It's really, really nice to see that my mom had so many people who loved her. And just the impact she had on everybody is fantastic. Anyway, she was a great teacher, both to her students and to Rob and I. We didn't get to see her too much in the teaching aspect there, but the way she just helped raise Rob and I was fantastic. Whenever she taught me math, though, it didn't go too swell. She supported me in everything that I did growing up. She was always on the bleachers at my baseball games, always keeping score. We had a few rough years, 1995 through 98, weren't good for either of us, but she continued to love me when I was not lovable. I was not the nicest daughter sometimes, but my mom never lost hope. I apologize every Mother's Day for those rough years that we had. She allowed Robbie and I the freedom we needed, which helped shape us into the adults we are today. She encouraged Rob and I to go away to school, which we both did. Rob heading east and me heading west. My mother was always there to support us. She was always there with her perfect logic and reasoning. When I said to her, "Mom, it hurts when I do this," she would simply reply, "Well, then don't do that." She loved to garden, especially with her granddaughter Myra, and was very proud of her beautiful yard. She had recently discovered a new love of quilting. She said that it was a great way for her to take out her anal tendencies. She was a fantastic knitter and made some great outfits for Myra and Liam. She enjoyed socializing and going to the theater with the ladies. Her pride and joy were Myra and Liam. Her face lit up when they were around. I'm so glad that they got to spend 4 years living with my parents, and hopefully those memories will stay with Myra. Although my mom cried at everything, something I also inherited from her, she was the strongest person that I've ever met. Every challenge that she faced made her stronger. When my father was not well, she had to step up and take over various roles and look after two teenage children and a husband who was ill. When the doctors warned her that her cholesterol and triglycerides were life-threatening, she dug in her heels and changed the way she ate and started going to the gym 3 times a week with a personal trainer. She continued to train at the gym up until she got sick last year. Her final challenge was cancer. The doctors were using the word palliative from the beginning. They were unsure how treatment was going to work and how much time it would give her. She took on this challenge as she had the others and said that she was going to do whatever it took to defeat the cancer for as long as possible. Unfortunately, this challenge was too much to overcome, but she put up the absolutely best fight anyone could have done. I'm going to leave you just a quick little list about why my mom was the best. Simple things. When I was in high school, my mom gave me a curfew of 2 a.m. All my friends' curfew was midnight. They were all so jealous. The funny thing was that my mom had figured it out, that I would be home by midnight too, because all my friends were. When a friend and I decided to get our tongues pierced when we were 18, my mom was against it. But when we came home with them done, she said they were ugly, but then proceeded to make us jello and pudding since that was all we could eat. When my mom was training with her personal trainer, she was probably physically stronger than I was. She made the best pickles and jam and would pack them in my carry-on so I could take them back to university. She encouraged Rob and I to live our lives away from home, but must have known that we would eventually find our way back to Toronto. She's the strongest person I know, and I thank her for helping me become the person that I am today. So thanks again for coming. We really appreciate it. You guys are all fantastic.
And Rob.
Actually, talking about smuggling pickles back in your luggage, I had totally forgotten about the cookie care packages that I would get at university that inevitably bought me better than cigarettes, I think, in the 90s. I would rely on those packages. We may not talk on the phone. Mom and I didn't talk very much when I was away. We were both not very good communicators, but the care package came regularly, so without even speaking, she could send me her love. Again, just like my sister said, thank you all for coming. It really is. We really thought this was big enough. sorry, it's not. So squeeze in, and I'll try and be brief. I'll try, but I won't be.
As long as you need to be.
So you've already heard about Joyce as a child of the North. As a friend and a teacher, and as a mother. And I have the difficult honor of trying to tie all these pieces together. The thing is, Mom would just tell me to stop making such a fuss. She worked quietly in the background, only raising her voice when there was something that I was doing that was stupid and that warranted her raising her voice. This she got from her father, Peter. She also worked hard in the background and did what needed to be done without complaint. And this she got from her mother, Edna. She led a quietly distinguished life marked by her strength of character, her consistent work ethic, and her demonstrated love to her family. She stuck by my sister when she was ready to quit school. She stuck by my dad. When a sudden brain aneurysm set him up for a year of intensive recovery and a lifetime of altered roles and responsibilities. She stuck by me, the son that she quietly believed was never living up to his potential. She would say if he only would stop procrastinating. She stuck by the Duncans, never taking sides in the dispute of the moment, which sometimes made our house seem like the gap between North and South Korea, brokering peace talks by phone calls and emails. I never once heard her publicly regret these roles. In fact, they were responsibilities that she shouldered without complaint. And I know Arlie said she cried all the time, but it's funny because in the memory, I only ever recall her crying twice. Once after she slipped on a toy on the stairs and didn't know I was still awake to see. And once again when driving away down Bridge Street in Sackville, New Brunswick, having just left her firstborn son in a strange maritime university town 2 days before I had a place to stay, just so that she could make it home in time for her first day back at teaching. Parental love could not trump obligation. She wanted me to have a university experience that would stretch my boundaries and allow me the independence to find my own path. And so both Arlie and I fled to the opposite coasts. It wasn't until we were at the doctor's office when we received her cancer diagnosis that I saw her cry again. Once more. And shortly afterwards, her brave face recomposed. She never once again complained about that particular cross that she had to bear. Now, you may be getting the impression that my mom was stalwart, in control, and never worried about a thing. That's not true. She worried that I'd sleep through school without her constant reminders, and dare I say, nagging. Second, she worried that her perfectionist son would never, ever get anything done on time. And thirdly, she worried that my Duncan side would leave me predisposed to booze and emotional avoidance. Well, I can say with confidence that on the first point, that's Becky's problem now. And it has been for some time. Regarding the second, the number one reason that I work for concerts and live events my entire life is that they have deadlines which cannot be pushed. Procrastinating does not get you a job the next week. And considering the nature of today's service, I think I can be forgiven a drink, and this room shows no sign of emotional avoidance. And I'm not on that page. It's funny that growing up, it's so hard to imagine your parents at work. Thing is, you can take the teacher out of the classroom, but you can't take the classroom out of the teacher. I'd like to say that my mom never took her work home with her, but that would be a lie. By grade 11, I was marking the straight answer questions for her grade 9 math and tallying red ink numbers in the margin. But with mom, you had to work your way up. You started by calling out grades while mom marked them on the grid, and when you proved yourself, you could move up to marking. But you were never allowed to do any show your work questions because only mom could give part marks. I also know that she dedicated much time drawing up worksheets and remedial tests for many immigrant students who arrived at her school and who were placed in several grades above their math skills simply because of their age. She had all the patience in the world for a poor or struggling student who was trying. That was the key, and it rained down on our heads at home that not trying was worse than bad marks any day. In fact, even good marks gained without effort were viewed with suspicion. Personally, as a teacher under her tutelage, like Arlie, I stunk. This just reinforced the similarities between us. You know the magnet rules, opposites attract, and like repels like, and all that. Well, this was evident to anyone who witnessed her try and teach me anything directly, either high school math or swimming. She was a bronze medallion lifeguard and swim instructor in Kenora, or, well, time management. All disasters. I can only imagine how difficult it is to butt heads with a little version of yourself. Well, actually, Myra has already started to grant me that gift, and my AV technician son. thanks, Mom. What goes around comes around. I only wish that you were here to smirk and feel vindicated, but that's probably not your style. Her best teaching to me was entirely by principle and by example. She pushed on the points where, that she knew were worth winning and learned to live with the rest. The rules were simple. Don't lie. Clean up your mess. Don't play at the top of the stairs. And no biting. A simple list and resistant to misinterpretation. Speaking of lying, let me tell you a story. When I was in grade 5 or so, I had a paper route. It required stuffing flyers into the paper and walking the papers around my neighborhood. I didn't mind the walking, but I really hated having to stuff the flyers. So one day, I decided that stuffing the flyers was optional and stuffed them instead in a garbage bag at the back of the garage. I was racked with guilt, but I figured I got away with it until I heard my mom call my name in a certain tone. And that guilt was replaced by utter fear. And she did the parental thing, which I'm starting to recognize in me, and gave me the chance to come clean. Anything you'd like to tell me? About what? The paper route. Heart pounding, sweat dripping. I was stupid enough to think I still had a chance. No. She dropped the bag at my feet. The jig was up. She started in about how lying was the worst possible thing I could do, and as she's telling me this, she starts to cry. She was so upset. And this I did not expect. Pretty soon everyone is crying, and I'm in big trouble. Thank you, Mom, and thank you, Dad, for letting me pick my own path, but not letting me give up before I'd started, for gently suggesting a slightly better path when the one I picked wasn't cutting it, for taking us outdoors, for threatening but not actually throwing water on me to get me out of bed, and for letting my family move in with you when Myra was born. You and Dad let Becky and I live in your house for Myra's early years. At the time, I thought it was the gift of free rent, the ability to sink our student debt and build up a house fund. But what we really gained was the wisdom and perspective of two additional parents. Myra is who she is because of her deep connection with Mom and Dad. And I was able to continue learning by example. I'm devastated that Liam will not have the same opportunity. A quick glance at the photos on display here will show you the deep connection that Mom had with my children. In fact, when Becky sat down to tell Myra that her regular grandma was dying, her second thought after, will it hurt, was that we have to move back into the house so that Grandpa won't be alone. Pretty selfless and solid for a four and a half year old, no? Myra surely carries Mom's light inside of her. Mom retired from teaching in 2002, and the first grandchild appeared in 2005, in preparation for which an onslaught of sweaters, pullovers, toques, mitts, and overalls all appeared. Sharon, my stepmother-in-law, once joked that Joyce knits, Pamela bakes, and I buy. More accurately, she scavenged at the thrift shops for great deals. But Mom was a knitting machine. She would often knit a pattern and then undo it just to knit it again, as far as I could tell. She said there was some kind of purl one, stitch two error, but I could never see it. It is true that my mom could be found in the family room watching CSI and knitting something, anything, to keep busy. After a year in retirement, she decided to take some seasonal work with H&R Block, just for some math fun. More than anything. And so she became a tax filer in the basement of Sears. And what she discovered was that it was really enjoyable helping people with something that they found difficult and complicated. I'm sure she didn't realize it there. She probably knew. But she would actually teach the seniors that came to see her how simple it was to file their own taxes so that they didn't have to pay filing fees anymore. Not terribly good for business. but a real boon to the people who crossed her desk. And it goes without saying that I've lost the best tax filer and prudent business advisor that I could have wished for. Mum quit H&R Block because she thought it was making it more difficult for Becky and I to manage Myra with our busy schedules. She made it possible for both of us to be flexible and grow our businesses. Mum had endless time for Myra until a knee injury and the cancer made it difficult to play on a toddler's level. The end of tea parties on the floor and long days of gardening were hard to acknowledge. It was devastating to Myra, and no doubt to Mum as well, since an admission of weakness is difficult for a woman who has lived both in the wilds of the North until she was four and went camping in a tent for fun well into her 50s. Mum, your quiet suffering through the last 14 months, inevitably answering how are you doing with not bad or just fine, even while confined to the couch. We both know this was not the case. What she meant, though, is don't let my troubles stop you from achieving your goals. I am not more important than you. It's a big obligation. And this is not surprising considering her mother Edna, my grandmother, while even unable to eat due to her own cancer when she was in her 80s, would answer the same question with a flippant, not bad for an old gal. Mom, you were not too proud for help. Everyone chipped in to get her to doctor's appointments, help her with her daily routine, and keep her mind off the sick. It just seemed that most of the time, she didn't need it. I admire your strength, both of body and character. Your patient determination with sometimes two idiot children. Your commitment to Dad after his aneurysm and for the 15 years following. I could always count on you to burst my bubble, to question my extravagances, and to squash frivolous dreaming. It sounds miserable, but really, on the whole, she was always right. She had only 7 years ago begun her retirement and had looked forward to alumni teacher curling, to grandkids, and some time with herself. To die just short of 63 is a life taken too soon. I'm being selfish, I know. Sorry, Mum. But I know that my children, and Arlie's future children, and indeed all of us, will suffer from your absence. I told you the night you died that everything would be okay. And I meant it. Not just to reassure myself, but to codify the promise that I intend to keep. All your efforts to raise us right were not in vain. And will be repaid tenfold. I promise. I love you, Mom. Taking everything. Sorry.
How powerful these witnesses have been. Are there other people who would like to share a story at this time? Anybody who would like to? I know many of you will share stories privately with one another, and we'll let you continue to do that. Let us pray. Eternal Spirit, Earth Maker, Pain Bearer, Life Giver, Source of all that is and all that shall be, Father and Mother of us all, loving God, in whom is heaven. Look kindly upon us in our sorrow for Joyce's life taken from us, and gather our pain into your peace. Be with healing in our memories. Be present in our grieving. Overcome all of our doubts. awaken our gratitude for all your good gifts of love and tenderness. And as we are able to receive them, teach us the lessons of life that can be learned in death. God, you have given us joys to know and love in our pilgrimage on earth. Uphold us now as we entrust her back to you. Eternal God, you have shared with us the life of Joyce. Before Joyce was ours, Joyce is yours. For all that Joyce has given us, and for that of Joyce which continues to live and grow, and for Joyce's life that in your love will never end, we give you thanks. As now we offer Joyce back into your arms, we pray for comfort in our loneliness, for strength in our weakness, for courage to face the future unafraid. Draw those of us who remain in this life closer to one another. Deepen our loving and our caring for one another. And give us to know that peace and that joy, which is eternal life. And so let us pray together as you are comfortable. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Joyce, be free, be strong, be proud of who you have been. Know that you will be mourned and that you will be missed. And know that no one can replace you. Know that you have loved and that you are beloved. Move beyond form, flowing like water, feeding the sunlight and the moonlight, radiant as the stars in the night sky. Pass the gates, enter the dark without fear, and rest until we meet again. Go in peace, beloved Joyce. Travel safely with our love, safely into the mystery of God. May the blessing and peace of that spirit of life be with us all, and may each of us have a deeper sense of what life is really all about. May we live more intentionally and more deeply and more wildly and more generously and more alive because we have stood before the mystery of death. Thanks be to God. Continue the party.